Okay, the next presenter is Dr. Hisako Sakiyama. And Dr. Sakiyama is going to talk about what became clear in the Diet Fukushima investigation.
Good morning. First of all, I would like to thank Dr. Caldicott for inviting me to this important symposium. I'm honored to have the opportunity to speak on risk assessment of low-dose radiation in Japan, what became clear in Diet Fukushima investigation. Daily life in Japan can never return to what it was like prior to the Fukushima accident. With more than 900 petabecquerel of radioactive materials released, about 10% of Japan was contaminated, and more than 150,000 people were evacuated from the contaminated area. We must worry about the contamination of vegetables, fish, and even drinking water. Anyone living inside of the sky blue zone in this slide will receive more than 1 millisievert per year, which is the ICRP dose limit for the general population. The lowest level of contamination of the red zone is more than 2 times higher than that of Chernobyl restriction zone. One of the reasons the National Diet Investigation Report concluded that the accident is not over yet is because 676 tons of spent fuel remain in the reactor vessel and the cooling pool of Unit 1 to Unit 4. These vessels are all damaged and continue to release radioactive materials into the environment. Our most pressing concern is Unit 4's cooling pool that's damaged by hydrogen explosion. It has more than 200 tons of spent fuel. If it should collapse from the aftershock, the result would be catastrophic for Japan and the world. In this slide, the red circles indicate earthquakes stronger than magnitude 7. Black circles indicate nuclear power stations. As you can see, Japan is a land of earthquakes with 54 nuclear power reactors and more than 20,000 tons of spent fuel. Until the Fukushima disaster, the majority of the Japanese people did not recognize the danger of this situation. One of the reasons for this is because government and the electric companies through the use of not only mass media, but also school education system created a nuclear safety myth. Next, the Ministry of Education, Culture, Sports, Science, and Technology, together with electric power companies, are the main role players. They realized that if the people were afraid of even minute amount of radiation, it would be difficult for them to promote expanding nuclear power policy. Prior to the Fukushima accident, they distributed secondary school textbooks teaching that nuclear power plants were safe. They claimed that the power plants were built on the hard bedrock, they could withstand earthquakes. They also stated plants were designed to bear tsunami and so on. After the accident, however, they had to admit that the plants were not safe, and they recalled the textbook. Nine months after the accident, Next distributed a new series of textbooks on the subject of radiation for primary school students as well as junior and senior high school students. Although they claim that purpose of these textbooks is to provide students with the basic knowledge of radiation, they only mention the earthquake and the release of radioactive materials in the introduction. They did not provide any information on the amount of radioactivity released, nor maps of the contaminated areas. In the guidelines for the teachers, they recommended that teachers create an understanding for students that there is no clear evidence that radiation level of lower than 100 millisieverts causes disease. Isn't there any evidence that that shows low level of radiation causes cancer? It is well established that complex double-strand breaks of DNA induce cancer. Complex double-strand DNA breaks result in error-prone repair and causing mutation and genomic instability, bringing about an accumulation of mutation. The final result is cancer. Even a single track of radiation can result in double-strand breaks and is therefore theoretically capable of inducing cancer. This is because energy of radiation is so much stronger than that of chemical bonds of DNA. For instance, the energy of diagnostic X-ray is 15,000 to 20,000 times greater than that of the chemical bonds. So radiation can easily produce complex double-strand breaks and cause mutations and genomic instability. Experimentally, it has been shown that levels as low as 1.3 millegray can produce double-strand breaks, and the number of the breaks increase linearly with dose. Thus, we have experimental evidence that even a small amount of radiation possible to induce cancer. Then, what is the lowest dose for which good epidemiological evidence shows an increase in carcinogenic risk? One of the most reliable experimental studies is the lifespan study of atomic bomb survivors. In this study, the average radiation dose is 200 millisieverts, with more than 50% having a dose lower than 50 millisieverts. As you can see in this slide, there is no threshold below which no risk was found. A linear non-threshold model provides the best fit to actual cancer death data. Besides atomic bomb survivors data, there are many studies showing low-dose radiation risks. There are studies on radiation workers at nuclear facilities, the people living near the Techa River in Russia, and children that developed leukemia in the vicinity of nuclear power plants and other high background areas. In all these studies, the risk per dose of radiation is higher than for the atomic bomb survivors. Radiation also induces non-cancer diseases. The dose-response relationship between non-cancer disease and radiation has been reported for atomic bomb survivors. Dr. Yablokov and his colleagues have provided us with undeniable evidence demonstrating the relationship between non-cancer disease and radiation. I'm sure Dr. Yablokov will talk about this matter. Based on experimental and epidemiological studies, the concept that there is no safe dose of radiation has been accepted. The government dose limit of 20 millisieverts for Fukushima residents is sacrificing the health of people, especially the health of children. Why do Japanese government and radiation specialists say that their low level of radiation risks are unknown or pose no risk? The Dyess investigation discovered the reason for the underestimation of the effect of low-dose radiation. A review of TEPCO and Federation of Electric Power Companies, FEPC, records revealed that the highest risk to TEPCO was long-term shutdown of nuclear reactors. TEPCO also realized that natural disasters would cause regulation to be tightened, which would ultimately lead to long-term plant shutdown. They took the easiest path to avoid this risk. They lobbied the Nuclear Safety Committee, NSC, the Nuclear and Industrial Safety Agency, NISA, and MEXT to relax regulation standards, and their efforts were successful. That is, the regulatory authorities became captives of TEPCO and FEPC. The FEPC also successfully lobbied radiation specialists, including ICRP members and NSC, so as to relax radiation protection standards. In one of their documents, they noted that all the lobbying requirements were reflected in ICRP 2007 recommendations. One of the ways FEPC achieved this was covering the travel costs for ICRP members attending international conferences. In spite of this fact, Japanese ICRP members insist that ICRP is neutral and is not represent the interest of the electric industries. The FERC is trying to control radiation research for its own benefit. For example, TEPCO's ex-vice president, Mr. Muto, said, "We should monitor the direction of research so that it doesn't go in a bad direction or be led by bad researchers." FERC only wanted research to be carried out that would relax the protection standards. So there is evidence that low-dose radiation has risk. The reason why this risk is proposed to be unknown is because the governmental and electrical companies wish to maintain their nuclear power policy. Next, I would like to talk on why stable iodine was not taken by most of the residents. There are two ways the local mayors can receive advice as to when they should advise residents to take stable iodine. One, directly from NSC. Two, from the government of Fukushima Prefecture. After the accident, The NSC had sent a fax to the local nuclear emergency response headquarters recommending that residents take iodine. For some reason, the fax did not reach the mayors. It disappeared. And to this day, nobody knows where it went. The NSC also sent a fax to Fukushima government. However, nobody noticed the fax till 18th, which was too late as all the residents had already evacuated. Though the government of Fukushima did not receive any advice from NSC, he should have independently advised the resident to take iodine. He did not, as he had been waiting for advice from NSC. There were some mayors who independently decided to advise people to take iodine. Unfortunately, most of the mayors hesitated and did not. In all, only 10,000 residents ended up taking iodine. The reasons the mayor hesitated to give advice to take iodine were, one, mayors were afraid of the side effect of iodine, since NSC had emphasized the side effect. Two, the NSC's guideline recommended that stable iodine should be taken in the presence of medical expert. In most cases, there were no medical experts around. Three, they did not understand why iodine should be taken, nor were they informed as to the appropriate time for it to be taken. Next, problem with radiation emergency medicine network. Radiation emergency medicine is the medical treatment provided in the event of radiation exposure. In Japan, Radiation Emergency Medicine Network has three layers. Primary hospital provides the initial medical treatment for all victims. When a primary hospital is unable to treat a patient due to the exposure level being too high, the patient is transported to a secondary emergency hospital. If the secondary hospital cannot handle the victim, whatever the reason, they are transferred to tertiary hospitals. Japan has just two tertiary hospitals, one for eastern and one for western Japan. Unfortunately, the network was set up without considering the possibility of large-scale spread of radioactive materials. Because of this, many of the hospitals were located close to the power plant. At the time of accident, there were six primary radiation emergency medical hospitals in Fukushima, of which three were located within a 10-kilometer radius of the power plant. The three hospitals thus became unusable as the staff and patient had to evacuate. There were four other regular hospitals within 20-kilometer zone. The staff and patient from them also had to evacuate. During the course of evacuation, 60 patients died. The direct investigation team surveyed the location of radiation emergency hospitals. More than 50% of the 59 primary hospitals nationwide are located within 20-kilometer radius of nuclear power plants. That means they are within evacuation zone and would become unusable in the event of serious accident. We also found that the maximum number of patients that can be hospitalized by each of the primary and secondary hospitals is just one or two. How about the two tertiary emergency hospitals? They can handle no more than 10 critically ill patients. The Radiation Emergency Medical Network did not function during the disaster. Unfortunately, the situation has not improved since the accident. Considering current medical condition in Japan, it will be difficult to improve the situation in the short term. Therefore, Japan is not ready to operate nuclear reactors. Finally, I would now like to talk about Fukushima Health Management Survey. Not long after the disaster, Fukushima Prefecture launched the Fukushima Health Management Survey to investigate the long-term low-dose radiation on health. It has two parts, a basic survey and detailed survey. The detailed survey involves the ultrasound examination for Fukushima children up to 18 years old. Some preliminary data from the thyroid ultrasound examination was made public. In 2011, approximately 38,000 children were examined. 95,000 were examined in 2012. In 2011 survey found 186 children with nodules larger than 5 millimeters or cysts larger than 20 millimeters. Within 186 children, there were diagnosed with thyroid cancer. Three were diagnosed with thyroid cancer, and seven have susceptible thyroid cancer. As for 2012 examinee, detailed announcement has yet to be made, though one thyroid cancer had been diagnosed. An investigation of 4,500 children from control group outside of Fukushima is now ongoing. Although the thyroid cancer incidence seems to start increasing in the Fukushima children, we need to wait for the detailed result, the control study. In conclusion, I would like to say that I think the endless debate on low-dose radiation risk is not a scientific matter, but a political, economical, and social problem. I hope scientists will speak the scientific truth not for government or electric companies, but for the people. Four nuclear reactors have been damaged, and nobody knows how or when they will be isolated from the environment. As Japan is sitting on earthquake belt, we are in race with time to make nuclear plants safe. The Japanese government and electric companies must make it their priority to do the best to stop any further damage and halt the ongoing leakage of radioactive substances. It is their responsibility. since they promoted Japan's nuclear power policy. It is also responsible of every person in Japan to make sure that all plants that are currently running are shut down. We must also ensure that no further nuclear plants are restarted. I would like to ask you to work together with us for this purpose. Thank you for your attention.
You know, one thing, now that we're starting to get into low-level radiation, you know, there's a tendency of groups such as this and in lots of other areas to think of whatever you're interested in sort of monolithic fashion. Now, we're going to hear later in the conference about low-level radiation as related to age and related to gender. I would hope that in the future, perhaps later at this conference, we can begin to hear about low level radiation combined with other adverse things affecting the population, such as undernutrition, poverty, vitamin deficiency, or exposure to all the other mutagens to which you and I are exposed on a daily basis. I think there'd be a very good chance that whatever adverse effects of low radiation are found, they could be markedly magnified in populations with other adverse effects of one sort or another. Now, the last speaker this morning is Akio Matsumura, and he's going to talk about what the world learned from the Fukushima accident.
Mr. Chairman, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to express my thanks to Helen and the New York Academy of Medicine for organizing this timely event. I also like to take this opportunity to express my deep appreciation to the many participants who have worked so hard to increase public awareness of risk of Fukushima. The realm of nuclear science must be linked to political action. So we are here today. I have worked at the United Nations and other international organizations in London and New York for 40 years. And I have organized, attended many international conferences, starting with the UN Population Conference in Bucharest, Romania in 1974. Over the years, we have discussed in public, private, what you might consider the defining issue of the 20th century: population, environment, social economic issues, disarmament, women, children, and democracy. But we never discussed how one accident in a nuclear power plant could affect our lives for several hundred years, or how we lack a permanent nuclear waste repository, one that could store our spent fuel rod for 100,000 years. Discussion to political system and human rights now seems short-sighted when compared to potential nuclear disaster that could affect our descendant perhaps 20,000 years. 20,000 years. 20,000 years ago, humans were building tools in the Stone Age. Can you believe? I worry about the growing risk to children who are being continually exposed to radiation. Many of the children will suffer from infectious diseases, and many will develop thyroid, lung, or throat cancer, breast cancers, sometimes in their lives. According to Helen, over 1 million people have died of these diseases as a result of Chernobyl accident. Others here have said that Fukushima so far has emitted more radiation than Chernobyl. In my visit to Japan last year, I asked the party leaders I met their thoughts on the unstable state of the reactors and the thyroid cancer risk in the children. Few had any idea of the spent fuel rod or of their high level of radiation, or they sat 100 feet up in a damaged structure. Fewer still were thinking about public health. Undoubtedly, some politicians are aware of the potential catastrophe or reactor number 4. However, they showed their surprise when I told them that reactor number 4 had 10 times more cesium-137 than Chernobyl released. 5,000 times what Hiroshima bomb released 7 decades ago. They couldn't hide their shock when I told them that all of the spent fuel assemblies at Fukushima Daiichi contain 85 times more cesium than Chernobyl, and 50 to 100,000 times what released on Hiroshima. I thank Bob Alvarez for making these important calculations. I knew we had found the right message when we shared the article on our blog. It was read more than 1 million times in just a few days. These same politician leaders wonder why they had heard none of this from TEPCO. Last April, Ambassador Murata and I met with Osamu Fujimura, who held the powerful position of Chief Cabinet Secretary. He assured us he would convey our message to Prime Minister Noda before he met with President Obama on April 30th. Both leaders might have discussed Fukushima at their private meeting, but the idea for independent assessment team and international help for the disaster were not mentioned publicly. This was a mistake. The government's first responsibility is the security of its citizens. But instead of reaching out to the independent scientists, they only consulted TEPCO, focusing on minimizing the public relation fallout instead of nuclear radiation fallout. In any country, government and industry will keep sensitive information close after disaster. But Japan's actions have been near autocratic. Because of the government's unwillingness to share accurate information, Japanese citizens must rely on scrutinizing press corps for any useful information about the accident. Unfortunately, as with the politician, I found the journalists in Japan to be complacent and clueless. There is an amazing disconnect in Japan between the reality of Fukushima and the fictional image of the public has in mind. The press has failed in their job to close this gap. Japanese reporters, with several exceptions, have refused to investigate or ask the hard question about Fukushima. The New York Times Tokyo Bureau Chief Martin Fuckler provides a thorough look at the media club mentality and the aversion investigation in his excellent book, Credibility Lost, The Crisis in Japanese News Media, Newspaper Journalism After Fukushima. I think you should read this. To be sure, the government has not made their job easy. TEPCO says when and what information will be released, like when the site would open to the press, when the long video of accident would be released. The accuracy of government medical report is in question. But without anyone to ask those questions, the public is left behind, smokescreen operating on half-truth. The public has lost sight of the most urgent need with regard to Fukushima. Its efforts to end nuclear power in Japan are inspiring, but missed mark. The protests are a result of fear, frustration, uncertainty. Prime Minister Abe will guide Japan forward with continuing dependence on nuclear energy. He will continue to restart Japan's nuclear reactors. Of all the politicians I spoke with, he was least receptive to my message of the danger for the country's children or of reactor number 4 spent fuel rod. I feel sad that we must wait for the sacrifice of tens of thousands of children to come to light for the public to realize disaster at hand. I am surprised that one group has not taken forceful action. Spiritual roots of Japan sit firmly with respect for the natural environment. The Shinto, Buddhist influence in Japanese life have bestowed a sacred importance on the country's natural beauty and resources. Japan's environment has not known a bigger threat than the presented by the 4 damaged reactor at Fukushima. The country's spiritual leaders should be active in reinforcing the country's concern toward ongoing risk. We can see that Japan is ill-equipped to handle the ongoing problem of Fukushima. But this is more than Japanese problem. It has and will affect all of us. Are we doing enough? For the past 2 years, I have been warning of the potential catastrophe of reactor number 4 and the cancer crisis awaiting for our children. There are 4 major areas of concern that could cause a bigger disaster. Number 1, in reactor number 1, number 2, and number 3, complete core meltdowns have occurred. Japanese authorities have admitted the possibility the fuel may have melted through bottom of the reactor core vessels. It is speculated that this might lead to unintended criticality, resumption of the chain reaction, or powerful steam explosion. Either event could lead to major new releases of radioactivity into the environment. Number 2, reactor 1 and 3 are sites of particularly intense radiation, making those areas unapproachable. As a result, reinforcement repairs have not yet been done since Fukushima accident. The ability of these structures to withstand a strong aftershock earthquake is uncertain. Number three, temporary cooling pipes installed in each of the crippled reactors pass through rubble and debris. They are unprotected and highly vulnerable to damage. This could lead to failure of some cooling system, causing overheating of the fuel, further fuel damage with radioactive releases, additional hydrogen gas explosion, possibly even zirconium fire, fuel melting within spent fuel pool. Number four, reactor number four building and its frame are seriously damaged. The spent fuel pool in unit four, with a total weight of 1,617 tons, is suspended 100 feet or 30 meters above ground. Typical plans to remove the spent fuel rot in the coming years, but if there is another massive earthquake nearby, this may not be fast enough. If this pool collapses or drains, the resulting blast of penetrating radiation will shut down the entire area. These plants represent unprecedented international security risks. I view this as the problem for human civilizations. Have I been overestimating the potential catastrophe? Your calculations tell me there is a much higher probability of another disaster than one might think. So why are we allowing ourselves to take such a large risk? Allowing our future depends solely on chance or goodwill of TEPCO or Japanese government. And if another earthquake and further meltdown are indeed possible at Fukushima, I must ask what so many Japanese leaders ask me: why does the United States stand by silently? It's in the United States' interest to take public action. High quantity of radiation reaching the West Coast would ruin our food crop. Geopolitical tension that would arise after such a disaster, ensuing evacuation would strain already difficult relations in East Asia. And finally, we are vulnerable to similar threat at home. A similar disaster could happen in the United States or elsewhere in the world with a nuclear reactor or temporary spent fuel storage facilities. There are more than 400 nuclear power plants online today, more than 100 of which are in the United States. Several sit near fault line. Others are old. And then there are the 24 temporary spent fuel storage facilities holding rods like those suspended above reactor number four. Many are only warehouses. Building a nuclear power plant might be rocket science, but maintaining the function of a cooling system is not. Yet these systems are so delicate and prone to failure. As we have seen in the last months at Fukushima, something as simple as a collision of a pipeline can set off meltdown. It is a time we regard nuclear power plant and storage facility as security risk. Nuclear security is not an issue where the president should lead from behind. In the case of a nuclear accident here or any other country, you can be sure the government and nuclear power industry reaction will be mirrors Japan's. They will control all information and access to the nuclear site, claiming national security concerns. The right to keep information from the public after disaster must be a privilege for the government, not an expectation. We need to establish now what level of access is necessary for scientist reporters, what level of government discretion is necessary for national security. We need a framework for this agreement. For now, this burden lies with investigators, and we are not well organized. Even outside of disaster scenario, there is no link between scientists and the politicians. This is true here in the United States too. I was shocked to learn in the past 2 years how much trouble our top scientists have when contacting senators and congressmen. I didn't find this to be the case 20 years ago. Continuous and open line communication between independent scientists, engineers, journalists, politicians is essential to handling another nuclear disaster effectively. I would like to ask all of you to persuade your government to share with the Japanese government your concern with the potential catastrophe and its international security and health issues. I conclude with 3 proposals for international action. 1, fact-finding mission to Fukushima made up of a select group of lawmakers from United States, Russia, Ukraine, Germany, England, France, and Canada. Senator Wyden of Oregon set an example by visiting last year. 2, special program established by UNICEF and the WHO to take extra measures to save the children who are being continually exposed to radiation in coming decades. 3, mechanism for nuclear scientists and medical doctors to collaborate and develop new technology and medicine to treat illnesses associated with radiation exposures. When Prince Charles of England spoke last year at the Rio+20 conference, he said with regard to climate change, "It is perhaps a trait of human nature to act only when the worst happens. But that is not a trait we can afford to rely on here." He could have been speaking about Fukushima. I will continue to write my blog as a layman with my partner, Chris Cote, excellent man, young man I never met. And I again praise Helen and the New York Academy of Medicine for coordinating this event. And I thank you very much for your attention.